Scions of the Southland, the 216th version. I don't know of any. I don't know what the 216 area code is. Do you know what the 216 area code is?
Oh, gosh. I feel like I should. That feels like something that I would know.
It feels vaguely familiar, but I don't know if it's actually something. We are recording live from the Jake Grant homestead because my internet decided it was not going to operate today. And the 216 area code is the city of Cleveland, according to his television, of which he has Apple TV'd his Apple computer.
I will say, the Samsung Smart TV with all of our notes on this
giant screen
and doing this live.
It's nice. We get to basically sit back. I try to relax. I did a lot of episodes in the past where I was sitting on one of my couches, but I was like, there's people living with me. Like, I was just kind of being in the way. But now that we can just use a full living room to record, it's nice. It's nice.
The thing about being the man of the house tonight is it means that there's not somebody else using my TV.
No, there's not.
So
usually I'm on my, well,
ironically, my monitor is my dorm room TV from back when I lived in beautiful Caldwell Residence Hall on the West Campus of Georgia Tech. But that was many moons ago at this point.
Yes,
so.
Yes. Today. Busy man. So it's a two-man boat. Once again, I had to start by acknowledging that my sports childhood era has ended today with Matt Ryan retiring. I think it really ended when Freddie Freeman left the Braves and Matt Ryan got traded, literally in a 3-day span, like April 18 to 21, 2021. They both, or 2022, they both leave.
Yeah.
But it's March, because April would have started baseball season by then. But Matt Ryan retired today, and undoubtedly the best Falcons player that we've ever had in terms of by far, in terms of just duration and amount of wins and the fact that he got us the closest to a ring that anyone ever has. Like, it's right now it's pretty undeniable.
I was gonna say, as somebody who didn't grow up down here, I think the Michael Vick cultural cachet of the Atlanta Falcons can't really be overstated. I mean, that's how they came on to
our radar
up there for the first time. Yeah. But
now, having Vic, I mean, Vic was at the very, very early end of my childhood, and then by the time I was old enough to really kind of get the sports world was when he had his legal problems with the dog fighting and all that. But
I still remember where I was when all that news broke.
I think I do, too.
Wild.
I think I was at my grandparents' house. The good thing is, though, is he redeemed himself big time, paid his debts and everything. Like, that man was the model version of how to rebound from a situation like that, and then put on one of the best Monday Night Football performances ever with the Andy Reid Eagles. I think he threw for like 200 yards in the first half, went up 21-0 on somebody. I don't know. They won. It was incredible to see. Anyways,
I will say I empathize with you on the end of childhood feelings. I don't know if this is necessarily childhood per se, but my almost entirety of my high school was very into that peak Cub, like, first getting all
right,
the prospects,
right,
and then they
right
all developed, and mm-hmm, then it all happened, and then coming down maybe the end of the high school college era.
Yep.
Jake, I like, you know, you can see those distinct points where it's like the stake in the ground and mm-hmm, and things like that, and honestly, we're getting to the point along in doing this podcast and being tech men that, like, you know, you'll start to hit, I guess we'll start to hit points where eras come and go.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I still remember where I was when Paul stepped down too in that press conference that day.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Next note before we get into the meat of the sports is that we had mentioned the Charitabundi Bowl, mm-hmm, and we got fourth overall.
I thought it was fifth.
Was it fourth? Fourth? Here's the only thing that matters is a school out east got behind us.
Yes.
We out donated the crap out of an SEC school that also happens to reside in the state of Georgia.
One problem with that is I remember when we used to, like, wipe the floor with them. But I guess friendly rivalry is fine as long as, you know, if it's going to be competitive, might as well be tech on the
when we're
the
helping
top
refugees,
side,
they're yeah honestly, I mean, as long as we're doing that, that's all that, I think that's all that matters there. Oh, Michigan technically won by a not close amount, so, and they tend to usually do that. So, but good to see the results of that. Quickly on the Edge Center / Fanning Athletic Center update, they have taken out more bleachers in Bobby Dodd. Not that many more, but they've kind of moved over like the fence of where the new edge of the stadium is a little bit further in as they've cleared out bleachers. And I put a picture up on our From the Rumble Seat Twitter a few days ago, and they have like taken down basically the entire ADA walkway at the corner. And they said today in the daily newsletter that the school puts out that there's supposed to be actual demolition that was supposed to happen, at least start today. I didn't actually check. But there will be pieces of Edge soon to be pieces. It won't be a whole thing. It'll be pieces. So that's coming right. That's coming up soon. So
if they need me with my Pickmatics, that's been getting a lot of work in the backyard lately. So you know,
that'll be an interesting. If you're a student on campus, it's a very interesting time to be to just have this much. We've talked a lot about how construction basically is a nonstop thing at Tech, but this is a. And just in terms of sheer square footage, this is about as much as I've ever seen at a single time in high volume areas on campus too, because it's a lot of sidewalks. It's cycle tracking along First. So in terms of the amount of just,
it's a lot more in the, like in the connective tissue type right. space. I feel like, cause like, I don't know. I remember, like the student center, of course, the library, I think part of that at least was maybe close to each other, but in my head it feels like it was at the same time.
Right.
The thing I liken it to, and I think this was the year before you got to Tech, was they had Atlantic and Van Leer, and Atlantic was shut all the way to First Drive.
Right.
At the same time that Tech Green was under construction. So walking along the north side of Tech Green was literally like going through a little channel. Which I guess is like the flip side of what they're doing on First Drive, because First Drive is just one long like snake.
I remember when State Street was also closed down when they were doing Candida stuff, and we rejoiced very mightily when they reopened State Street on the campus side of 10th Street.
And I was gonna say, if there's one thing that Tech has shown, it's that they can do a phenomenal job with the end products for some of this stuff. Like I was walking around the Eco Commons, and I don't know, I haven't spent much time there since I graduated, and it looks like it's always been there.
It's still great. Know? Yeah, it's I've had the Eco Commons more than I haven't had the Eco Commons since I got to Tech. So that's great. All right, let's move on to golf, which was the really big thing today. They had ACC championships. They qualified for the semifinals over the weekend because they finished top four in stroke play. Crystal Lamprecht did not win. The guy that won last year won again from North Carolina. I think they had to like go to five extra holes, and they just declared it a co-champion with some Wake Forest guy. I don't know exactly. But we were tied for second at four under with Wake Forest and Florida State. So we were squarely, and then the fifth was a few strokes behind. So we were squarely in the top four. Things started okay. We were up 2-1 early on. It was like in that 1-1-2-2 range. I was doing timestamps. 9:25 in the morning. We were up 2-1. Fontenot and Hiroshi Tai were leading. Then just Fontenot was leading, and then Lamprecht finally got his lead at 9:54 in the morning. And then Florida State took a 3-2 lead, and then we never exactly took another lead again. Generally, and then we lost 4-1 in the end. Jake, it's at the bottom of our sheet if you want to scroll all the way down there.
Yeah, I was following along with the general commentary and you know, just general score updating type thing. But my one like question that I wanted to ask you, because it seemed like you were able to actually, you know, tune in physically. So I know that the weather was bad up in the Carolinas this morning, same reason that we saw a lot of doubleheaders up and down the East Coast in softball.
It was a weird golf weekend just in general. Like the entire, like so many golf events got impacted by the storm. Like if you're in Atlanta, like you know that it rained. Like that whole system disrupted the ACC tournament, both on the men's and women's side. It disrupted the RBC Heritage on the PGA side. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if it messed with the Chevron.
They just straight up declared Wake Forest the winners of the women's really ACC, which is a little bit...
It was sad. They had polls to go, and they just gave it to them because they were the top-ranked team left. Yeah. But yeah, the RBC had to finish this morning, which felt kind of pointless considering Scotty Scheffler was five up with three holes to go.
Nice.
And he wins again. So in terms of the weather, it actually, in terms of just, it was colder. That's for sure. It was in the 40s in Atlanta this morning, but it was the same over there.
Oh yeah.
But the thing is, because of all the rain that had come through, the course was playing true, and just that wherever the ball landed, that's where it was staying. Like, so it's a good course at Charlotte Country Club. But not exactly greens that are going to like be rock solid no matter what happens weather wise. So it was a lift clean in place day, but it was sunny the whole time. Like, it was just the after storm effects.
So, and the thing I was gonna like really drive at, and I think we're like almost there, is it seemed like, based on the notes and the commentary, you know, course is playing true, putt sticking. So I take it then that Florida State just outplayed Georgia Tech then. Yes. They were dealing with all the same stuff.
They were. And no, it was that, like, our putts were not going down at all. That was the whole thing. Christo won his match pretty handedly. Most of his whole wins came in the back nine. But as soon as we took the turn from, it was pretty even up to the, we started on 10. So we were that's where our shotgun start was. Once we got to the front nine, on the actual course, that's where things went sideways for, our other dudes, Bartley Forrester, Hiroshi Tsai, and a couple others. Oh, who else played? Cale Fontenot, and I'm forgetting the last other guy. But that was the problem, was just too many putts not going where they need to go, and then that kind of just ruins everything. If you want to win a match play, you have to putt.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
I mean, that's probably the place where it is the most crucial, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. No, you can recover. I mean, Christo had to recover plenty of times, and he was fine. But, yeah, in match play, if you cannot hit your birdie putts, or at least a couple clutch ones here and there to get momentum going, it's over. And Florida State hit basically all theirs at the exact same time on holes 1, 2, and 3. And that was it.
I like it to the difference between like an NFL schedule and an NBA schedule, you know? You're playing a lot more strokes, and there's a lot more ways to put a point on the board when you have to score all 6, 5 strokes rather than just one or
none. That's a good point. Yeah, it's like that. Yeah. They will next play in the NCAA Regionals, which will be May 13th as the start. That's a Monday. They're definitely going to be in it because they're still a top 25. They're 16th in the last coaches poll. So they'll be in it. I could not find where exactly they're going to be doing this.
They may not have announced it yet. And so the thing about NCAA regionals that I think for track and golf and things like that, cross country, that are worth highlighting is that a lot more teams than you think, based on your, like, our baseball, softball. I mean, hockey's 16, but, you know, like baseball, softball, men's, women's basketball, 64 to 68 teams. Tennis, the same way. But with golf, they invite like 80 or 90. Like I don't know that. I think it varies year to year, and you get individuals in there too. But like, this is as much of a foregone conclusion, even in if Tech was not a top 25. Like if you're a competitive Power 5, Power 4 type team, you're making it. Like it now, they just got to get top 5. And there has definitely been times when we think that that might happen and it doesn't. But you know, that's it's you just got to hit the bar. Like. Yeah, getting a regional trophy is nice, but you just got to play your way to nationals at this point.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't get the ACC title.
Right. Yeah, we're going to get, I don't know, I don't know. There's no consolation match or third place match in the ACC tournament. So we were done this morning, and then North Carolina Wake Forest finished later on. Yeah, I mean, we had to scrape and claw to get the ACC tournament win last year.
Yeah.
And we just had a really good day at regionals and got our way to the finals. So, I mean, it's going to take a team-wide great day. We have not seen Tech top to bottom just utterly demolish a tournament. And it's going to take something like that because, as you said, there's like 85 teams that are going to be in this. Now, not at one place. Like, yeah, they're split them up. There's regionals for a region.
And that's the interesting thing, too, about all this, and we can kind of put a bow on it a little bit here, is we've seen Tech be incredibly competent this year. Very, very solidly competent. But I don't think we've seen the high or low variance that we've seen.
It's been very steady.
Maybe a little bit same kind of lower tier, but we just haven't seen them like pop up and grab
they haven't gotten hot
outside of like a Christo individual type performance. So
yeah, the team wide has not gotten hot like we saw North Carolina get this week. So that'll be the hope, is just they figured out all at the same time and go win the thing. So we'll see how that goes. Okay, softball. So they had a I think a week we thought they were gonna have. They just barely beat Georgia State 5-4 in Panthersville in the midweek game. Very clutch hitting at the end, like awesome stuff. They for not being an elite ACC team, they have found multiple ways to get wins. So I was proud of them for just one of those games that can be really funky. They still figured it out in the end. And then they went to Virginia Tech, who is the only ACC team with more home runs than us, and they pretty much shellacked us. So the positives, Kenzie Norton went 3 1/3 against Georgia State to keep us in that game. But we let Chandler Dennis pitch on Sunday at Virginia Tech, and it's not hard to see that if we're playing a good team, they will hit Chandler Dennis. If we're playing an average or below average team, she can make it. And, well, Virginia Tech is top, 10 in the country. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the last 4 or 5 years, they've been incredibly competent, and playing them in their building is spooky in a lot of ways. I know that it's also a place that's not terribly easy to get to if you're a team. So nope. You're kind of charter or you're in for a long trip, but I don't think that necessarily the result surprises, nor do I think it's, I don't know, not excusable is the wrong word, but I don't know. It's late in the season. They're off the bubble firmly,
right? Yeah.
In terms of at least metrics that we've got,
there's not enough games, and they kind of needed to get some upsets here, and they did not do that.
Maybe they come in, and we'll kind of prognosticate this coming weekend here at the same time. They get Virginia next. Virginia, I think, is this year's surprise ACC team.
Okay.
I have 5 teams right now in the tournament. Virginia is solidly one of them.
Oh.
That being said, the next 4 teams, by some funky stretch of math, work out to be in order after those top 5 in the ACC: North Carolina, Louisville, Notre Dame, and Georgia Tech. I think we saw the weekend before last, Louisville and Georgia Tech play a tight weekend. We just saw Louisville and North Carolina play a tight tournament this weekend.
Yeah.
All of those teams have the ability to notch some wins here in the next couple of days. North Carolina is having a better season than they have in a while, but you know, like I said, Georgia Tech gets Virginia, and there's wins still on the table for those. It would not surprise me to see one of those 4 teams kind of do just enough, especially if you win one that you may not expect in ACC times coming up here. But that's our 11 through 14 teams, and in terms of bubble order, and that doesn't account for any bid stealing or things like that.
Right.
And yes, of course, the Big 12, Pac-12, SEC is going to be the vast majority of the bids this year, with the ACC kind of accounting for a few there as well. But I don't know. It's one of those where you kind of wish you got at least one, but I can't really say that I expected to grab one against a really, really competent and highly successful Virginia Tech team. And I mean, they've just been clicking on all cylinders for a half decade now.
So. Yeah, they were 32-9 going into the series. Now 35-9. They've won 8 in a row. Of those 4 teams you mentioned, though, of the ACC, those like 4 ACC teams that are on the just holding on the bubble, at least according to your metrics, Tech is on top of those 4 teams in the ACC standings, and the only team with a winning record in the ACC.
Yes,
we're at 11-10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 6 teams with winning ACC records, and we're the last team that does. North Carolina just behind us, 10-11. We're at 11-10. But then Notre Dame at 8-13 and Louisville at 6-12. All these teams do have winning records in general. North Carolina notably at 30-15 to our 29-20. So they've got fewer games, fewer losses.
And I think that's why North Carolina's not in the picture right now, is because that's been a softer schedule. And you saw Tech take their lumps early, especially early. You know, you got Bama plus Clearwater, and that was a gauntlet of 8 games right there.
Yep.
8 games right there. Yep. That's the flip side to not grab, you know, popping up and grabbing one of those or getting a Virginia Tech. I mean, you could see Notre Dame or Louisville very well not make the ACC tournament. You're not going to the postseason if you don't make the ACC tournament. There's not a chance. And at the very least, Georgia Tech is still positioned decently well to not play day one. And I think that would also be to their benefit, though. You know, maybe there's an argument of saying, hey, going 1-1 in postseason play in the ACC tournament rather than 0-1, but I think it's something we're just gonna have to let play out. Like I said, big opportunity this weekend with Virginia, who the metrics really like. They're a solid team this year, and you know, you really gotta get some of those wins against a top line type victory.
Very similar team to us. They're 11-9 on the road. We're only 9-10.
Yep.
They're good at home, 13-6. We're 20-6 at home, and both of us are 5-5 in our last 10. And they've got the exact same record as North Carolina, 30-15. So, yeah, just the basics show some pretty even keeled numbers there. My hope is they just throw Sophia Voiles and Kinzie Norton and figure out how to not use Chandler Dennis and sparingly get Blake in there when just someone needs a rest, or if they just need some power pitching or something like that. If either Blake or Chandler throw now, we know it. They're going to inevitably bleed runs somewhere. And Sophia, was it Kinsey's going to get ground balls. The defense is fine. And Sophia's just on fire. She's just good. She's just the best we have right now. So
yeah,
we cannot, I mean, in a win now mentality, you kind of just got to throw your arms like it's a playoff game and just let them throw and throw and throw.
Yeah. Especially in softball. I mean, that's,
yeah, yeah.
You can see girls pitch two complete games in a three game series. Right. I mean, if you've really got the top line talent, granted, is that, you know, wise arms and workload wise,
I don't know.
Your mileage may vary,
and they don't really do that. They've kind of stayed with this pitch by committee thing in games where they're shortened because of a run rule. They'll let them throw the whole way because it's not a whole game.
Yep.
But
I think that's why we saw Voyles so much against Louisville the weekend before too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Softball stat line. Our friend Tyson's little thing he's made. He's got our offense ranked 19th in the country right now. Our defense, which I believe includes pitching, at 174th.
Yeah, that tracks.
So that makes sense. And overall in the country, he has us as the 69th best team, dropping 8 spots via losing to VTech. So it could have been worse. I don't know.
I mean, that's at the end of the day, like, this isn't an exact science, but the fact that his offensive and defensive metrics profiles very similarly to our schedule and results-based metrics, I think that only reinforces how I think we kind of sit in the grander scheme thing. Yeah. So
it tracks. Also, Tyson, shout out. Finally got to meet him. Cool dude. Next up, we play Kennesaw State at Mewbourne on Tuesday, and then our ACC finales against Virginia. Or no. No, then we go to North Carolina, right? No, we already did that. Did we already do that? Hold on. We should have had the schedule pulled up.
Yeah. Wait, a week when we're not playing the schedule game? What the heck, Jack?
We literally read the schedule out loud.
I mean, it's all vibes-based, you know?
It is. Well, either way, we got 4 home games this week, so please do come out if you're going to be there. I know I'm going to be there. I guess this is coming out on Tuesday. I'm going to be there tonight. And then I will do my best to be there for some of the weekend. Now we're scrolling down. No, yeah, this is it. These are the last 4 games Tech has before ACC tournament play in Durham, North Carolina, which will come.
It'll come midweek.
We got midweek, and then it looks like also a week and a half after we're done. So we're going to have some rest time.
And I will say there, I think that's one way that, you know, I would love to still have games on the schedule, but to have the break going into ACC play, I know. Last year and this year too, even we've seen schedules where teams are playing right up into you know, tough ACC games the weekend before. Again, I draw on the Louisville bit a lot, but they got sent to Florida State the weekend immediately before having to play the opening round.
That's rough.
At South Bend last year, and that makes for, you know, that makes for a tough stretch, especially with finals and whatnot. I think, you know, they got four wins on the table. If you can pop up and
it's doable, it's absolutely doable.
Grab all of those, you're sitting at a 33-20. I believe Tech was what, like a 38-18 or something like that the year that they went to the Florida regional. So
in
the ballpark, maybe on the low side, but at the very least, that, you know, they're not out of it by any stretch. And you can always win the dang tournament. I mean,
yeah, like, will they? Very low percentage, but you never know.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at our home away and neutral records. This, if the season ended now, I think we both agree this is quite an improvement. Much better home winning record, 20-6, 9-9 on the road, being .500 on the road, regardless of what's going on, unless you're a powerhouse. Great. Yeah. And of course, all of our neutral sites were at Clearwater, so I'm just not even going to say that those even happened because we were never supposed to do anything.
I was gonna say,
I've
got a, I think my biggest, like, positive takeaway at this point in the season, we gave Hunter Bunches flowers last week.
Yes.
Today I'm gonna give Sophia Voyles flowers, because if we were in this position and it was, oh gosh, we are riding the fifth year graduating senior arms all the way to the bitter end of the ride, I'd be like, okay, what's coming next? But you know, I mean, the cavalry's coming. We've talked about the recruiting class.
Yes, yes.
Probably not as much as we'd like to yet, but that's something that we can talk to in a little bit here. But, you know, if Voyles can stay where she's at and we get another arm or two, this team is – I don't know. I feel like we have the roadmap, and this is the first year that's felt like okay –
it's something
now we're
buildable.
On the upswing, and you can build on that, and there's direction. I like direction. I can work with direction.
Direction
right?
is good. Yes. I agree with that. I think we're there.
Yeah.
So that's the case for softball. Go see them. they will take any and all welcomers to Mewbourne. Baseball, on the baseball side of things, lost 12-8 at Auburn midweek. Tough sledding there, but scoring a lot. And that was the theme of this entire weekend, was we once again beat a ranked team in a three-game series. we have somehow beaten all of North Carolina State, Virginia, and Virginia Tech, and did it by just doing it the Tech way, outscoring the crap out of whoever we were playing. And we actually had some decent pitching this week. This is a 2-1 series win. We won 13-2 on Friday in 8 innings, lost just barely in 11, 8-7 on Saturday, and then won 17-12 in not a football game, a baseball game on Sunday. I am getting just massive football vibes from these guys. Just like, why is this happening only now, when the best offensive teams, when our, like, Virginia is one of the best offensive teams in the country. Our pitching has been a problem spot this entire time. And yet, sure enough, Vinatieri throws 6.6 2/3 on Friday, his career long, gets 8 strikeouts. Ben King throws 4 innings, his career long on Sunday. Mason Patel gets out of 2 bases loaded jams to preserve the 5-run lead, of which we had already scored 17 runs on 25 hits. This is madness. This is is this the kind of baseball we have to play to win?
And that's the thing too, is like, the high, like, again, we went, Tech went on the road to Charlottesville to beat a Virginia team. I would say that the national rankings probably like them a little bit better than the numbers do, but that's what happens when you are a program that has shown the sustained success that Virginia has. You kind of get the benefit of the doubt there. They've won the games, you know? Like, I don't think their non-con strength of schedule is quite as good as quite as good as the rest there. But I think I don't want to just jump straight to Virginia. And this is something that I see a lot of college baseball take economy, if you will, built around, is that you got to win the weekend. You got to win the weekend. You got to win the weekend. Well, Georgia Tech went on the road to Auburn last week before going up to Charlottesville. And in that game, they lost 12-8 to an Auburn team that's not quite what they've been in the past, after giving 8 runs up in the bottom of the first.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, most people did, because you get some great, you sandwich 2 great weekend wins. I mean, granted, there was a run rule game against Virginia Tech in there, and you probably would have liked to win that extra inning game at Virginia, but I think the Auburn game's as emblematic as this season as anything. They give up a ton of runs, they fight almost all the way back, and then just let it go late by giving up 4 more.
This whole week gave us both versions of what happens when you're just too bat dependent. Is that you can have still score 8, which should win you most baseball games all the time. But when you're us, and we're the last year as well, where we'll do something like this, where we have where we score a bunch in the first inning, and then, oh no, we have to play 8 more innings. Figure out what the next 8 innings are going to be like. It happened, and then
then you bounce back from that by scoring 13 and winning in a run rule.
We outscored
ostensibly top 10 team.
I know, we outscored Virginia. What is that? 21, 38 to 21.
Yeah, by 17 runs.
My goodness gracious.
Yeah,
The thing is that this is baseball, and you could do that and win one game as well.
I mean, look at that.
Scored. Let's go in a row here. Have scored. Dating back to Virginia Tech series, we have scored 1 loss, 19 win, 11 win, 8 lose, 13 win, 7 lose, 17 win. So we have to score 10 runs to win a game.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
And that's, I feel like that's perfectly describing this team the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And that's what's, I think the perplexing thing about it, and the biggest thing there, is like, you and me saying that this exists, like, how many times and ways can we say that this is the problem? Like, they're in a crowded ACC, and again, to kind of lean on some, to do some schedule reading numbers, Georgia Tech is sitting firmly off the bubble. I mean, there's a lot of good teams in the conference. You know, you figure that, what, out of the ACC, at the absolute most, you'd see
it's a lot of teams
10 or 11 make the field. And yeah, and there are certainly,
I'd say, at least 9 or 10 worthy teams.
Yeah,
as stands. Yeah. Now, do I agree with, you know, maybe some of the
placements in there, and you go, oh, well, Georgia Tech. Yeah, no, they beat Virginia and Virginia Tech in a series. They swept NC State. Well, yeah, they also got swept by Boston College.
Yes.
They also got swept by North Carolina. It's a team that's been hot and cold, but even more so than softball, who has 4 games left in the regular season, Georgia Tech's got a lot of runway left on the baseball schedule
this
in
is
terms
true.
Of...
Well, we mentioned what last week is like, you had these are the, or was it last week or 2 weeks ago? Like, these are the games you just have to start winning. Like, you have to win now if you're going to at least give yourself a shot come down the stretch to be tournament to get to be for probably looking good to be in the ACC tournament. We're not that worried about that right now, but to have a shot to get one of those like 55 to 64 slots and then end up playing. I mean, if we play a regional, we're going to probably get Southern and Coastal, like we probably like go to Coastal Carolina or maybe Athens
ECU.
And then something. Yeah. It's going to be brutal no matter what happens. Cause Southeast baseball's good. I'll note some dudes did during this. Drew Burris is, got 17 homers now. He hit one, I believe, in the Sunday game. He is now one away from tying the freshman school record set by Jeremy Sladen with 18 homers, I believe, in 2002 was what I saw. Matt Ellis got ACC Player of the Week. He hit 500 with 6 hits, 7 ribbies, a homer, 5 walks. That dude was on base way more often than not.
Well, and as I recall, I think I was listening to the radio, or maybe I was talking with somebody in real life. These things run together. I believe that's with... all since going to a mixed DH catcher type setup for Ellis, that's kind of correlated with his nice little uptick in the last year.
I see. That's nice. That's a nice idea. Catchers, as we saw with Travis d'Arnaud.
I wish I could cite that conversation, but I sadly cannot.
Oh, dear. Well, okay, catcher's doing well between Matt Ellis and Travis d'Arnaud in Atlanta. RPI-wise, big jump to 13. Jump 13 spots to 61. And then Jake's got us. I mean, we're in bubble watch for sure. We're not like squarely out of it, but these wins are massive. This vaults us into a spot that, we definitely were not before. But you got to follow it up. You mentioned, this is so up and down. Consistency is going to be a huge factor here, and just winning late and getting hot. I mean, if you want to win baseball playoffs, as we have seen in all of the MLB playoffs basically ever, you got to get hot at the right time.
Yep.
It is totally fine if you play 500 ball into the last month of the season and then just basically just go on a massive streak. So we need that to start happening.
Yeah, and they're going to get a couple of weekends coming up here. Like, I mean, we'll see it just this weekend. Miami comes to town. Miami's
got a losing record this season.
Traditional power, but it is an ACC weekend. Oh, gosh, I didn't notice how bad their peripherals were, so maybe that won't be helpful.
Yeah, I don't think it will be.
Dang straight, got Clemson for 3 and Duke the weekend after that, followed by Florida State. I want you to just take a little gander.
Well, I'm looking at the ACC standings.
Do you know where those guys slot in? Because it's quite high.
So I see Clemson and Florida State have a combined 15 losses. So I'm guessing...
Not in conference. That's overall.
Overall.
Yeah.
And a combined 12 conference losses.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing somewhere in the top, they're definitely making the tournament no matter what happens at this point.
Yeah.
And then Duke has 29-11. Yeah. It's 13-8 in the conference. We are right now sitting 5th in the Coastal at 9-9. We still have games in hand. And so winning these... sweeping this Miami series is going to do a lot to help our standing, is give us some cushion when we have to play 3 of the best teams in the conference and therefore 3 of the best teams in the country. If we win all 3 of our games, I don't know if Virginia Tech is playing, but in the case that they don't, we would get all of our games in hand back on them and be 12-9 as well. So must win.
Yeah, it's time to make things happen, because again, like I said, there's slightly more time, but you don't really want to be on the outside looking in a very crowded ACC slate.
No, it would be a nice change of pace to just feel like we have a real shot come the last bit of the season. I think by this time last year, we were not at all confident that they could make a change here, but there's somewhat of a change. Like, these late season wins are somewhat changing, and we're seeing some flashes of good pitching that you need to at least hold games.
And can I get into the numbers on just one more little piece? If you think about it, playing the ACC teams more, the good ACC teams more at the end of the slate, your RPI is driven by the records of the teams you play.
Good point.
As well as your record, mm-hmm. as well as the teams they have played.
Uh-huh, yes.
So you're essentially minimizing the Radford in there,
right.
maximizing the Clemson.
Yes, yes. Oh, good point. Good
so
point.
You do need to win a couple of those, but it kind of, you know, the strength of schedule type metrics come up, the RPI metrics come up, the opportunities to get those good wins are there. And absolutely, you know, if you're taking a weekend against Clemson or Florida State, that's going to put you in a quite nice spot, because really no one's been doing that this year. So
yeah,
would except be, each other.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, it's a helpful way to think about the RPI. You want your best, you want your harder games to come later, after you've won your easy games. Which, I mean, that's kind of how it does work out, considering how non-con schedules play out. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna take a water break, and you're gonna read about Section 103.
Yes, I am, and I'm going to be pitching you, on Drew Burris. As noted previously, you need a Drew Burris jersey. He's number 8. He is very close to being at least the most powerful hitter as a freshman that Georgia Tech has seen. Georgia Tech, of course, has seen many, many great baseball players. So be sure to check out the Drew Burris jersey. But there are also great baseball shirts as well for the theme this year, but also other great NIL opportunities, including, you know, football folks, basketball folks, and, you know, give those a look as well. As always, code FTRS 10% off. Section103.com and at Section103.
Okay, I have consumed the H2O that I needed to consume. This was a big basketball week for our dudes and Damon Stoudemire. For one, the big news, well, not say news, but just, I guess, revelation was that 247 Sports had Tech as the number 12 recruiting class in the nation for this incoming 2024 to 2025 basketball year. That is not a thing we usually do, and I, which is really nice to see. And I mean, obviously volleyball and softball and baseball have gotten much better at recruiting, I'd say tennis as well, and have just, like, stayed consistent in that department. But it's been very, I think, just before we get into specifics, just really nice in general to see our two main public sports, and men's basketball and football, just do the work that they needed to do post those their previous coaches and just find some new footing and have some stable ground. And Damon's turning heads. The people that, I mean, he obviously, there's only so much you can do with the guys you're given with Josh, and I obviously we had two of the biggest wins in program history even with that, and now it's turning into players actually wanting to come here. And so I think just that whole having that vibe now is great. Obviously, you've still got to play the game, still got to win the games. Also, this is a freshman class we're talking about here. So it's not exactly like it's going to be probably amazing at the start. As we've seen in the NCAA tournament, experience tends to do better for you instead of schools that are all one and dones and stuff like that. But regardless of the fact, Damon's out here putting the work in, and he's getting the guys to show up, and that is not going unnoticed whatsoever. The transfer portal opened on Tuesday, which means we have some definite incomings and some potential outgoings and a potential outgoing. Although before we get there, Jake, I mean, any, like, finally it's nice to see basketball be good in this department thoughts at all?
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that, you know, basketball is very interesting because it, you know, there's five guys. You have a 13-man roster. It's mm-hmm. so inherently different than, gosh, like a baseball or softball, to say nothing of football or like swimming, where you got to have a stud at every single event, you know, and win every relay type thing, or mm-hmm. you know, a football, you need, you know, two lines of depth on both sides of the ball. Like there's a lot of just variance that can go into recruiting basketball players. I think that we saw kind of some interesting transfer in activity last year. I don't necessarily think that all of it panned out based on the outgoing that we saw kind of coming the other way. But, you know, I think with having another year under his belt to identify being a key word there, you gotta act fast if you're in Damon's position last year. But also, like, yeah, the variance was high this year, but they had great wins, like you said.
They did.
I think that, you know, you're throwing a starting point guard out there that's a freshman. You're throwing people
high school senior
to identify quickly onto a court. hey, if this turns into like a, you know, a
it's build, wild that it worked that yeah. well in those in that context. Like I mean,
especially in this day and age with how basketball's yeah. turned over so fast.
In the most one of the most chaotic instances of just settings of college basketball I've ever had. Of course, I say that, and UConn's won two titles quite handedly in a row. It's very impressive what he's doing. Okay, so transfer portal stuff. We have lost at least two guys. Ebenezer Duona has gone to James Madison. Tafari Kapari has gone to Maryland. Mm-hmm. I would not say those are program-changing departures whatsoever. I remember our friend Asa Waters saying, when you look at Kapari, don't look at the stats. And yeah. I think that still holds. He was in flashes, he was still fun to watch. Like you totally could see the athleticism there. And like the intent to like get something done, but there would be the times where he'd like drive up to the basket, and then the ball would end up behind the drum kit. Yep. So I don't blame him for maybe trying to find a new start. And I think you probably could see the forest for the trees here of what's coming on Taman's team, and he was not going to have an important role going forward.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just kind of reminiscing, just a little bit indulging, that is probably the phrase that has been uttered on this podcast this year that has defined most how I've thought about a player or a team.
Don't look at the stats.
Don't look at the stats. That's like every time I'm like sitting at a game or watching, I'm like, oh yeah, don't look at the stats.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
Duona going to James Madison. I mean, he was in and out of the starting rotation. There was the definite four starters we had in George, Ndongo, Kelly, and oh shoot, who am I thinking of? Somebody, and then there was just the rotating fifth guy. Oh god, the other three guys that were shooting threes. I'm so bad. I'm forgetting this. Oh my god. Now you get to hear me doing live stuff because that's just how it works when we go live. Who is the guy that I am? Kawasi Reeves Jr. That's who I was thinking about.
I should have bailed you out on that, but honestly, I was blanking too.
That's
I was
like, too bad. Where's he going? I'm so sorry. Well, of note, Lance Terry is going to be back next year. So, I mean, he didn't play at all this year. Got an injury. Just wanted to be ready and do a full year. So, just as you're thinking about next basketball season, keep that in mind that we still have Lance Terry to do things. Of note, Bane Odongo did declare for the draft, but he's doing the thing that Miles Kelly did last year, which is seeing if he's going to get picked, but he will keep his eligibility. So if he does not get picked, he will still be able to play for Georgia Tech. And I think all signs pointing to the fact that he would like to still play for us, considering he's the most important guy we got. And he's in and Atlanta's a great place to be in proximity to a lot of good NBA guys. So I think we're fine there. My only hold up here is that this is one of the worst drafts the NBA will have had in a long time. There is I don't even know who the projected number one is, because it kind of doesn't matter. It matters, but only so much. So that part worries me, that just like some team would just be like, okay, we're at the 44th pick, why the heck not, and then YOLO. Just go get them. And yeah. To any GMs, none of you listen to this podcast, none of you should, because this you do not have time for this. If you are deciding between, ooh, I want to get LeBron James, so I'm going to go draft Bronny, or I'm going to go build for the future and get Bane Odongo, I suggest go getting Bronny. We would prefer if you go get Bronny. But beyond that, just keep that in mind. It's of all years to have him, to have our best guy declare for the draft, but still maybe come back. This is the one year we kind of don't want that to happen. But anyways, so hopefully that will pan out how we want it to. Two incomers, Javian McCollum from Oklahoma, who was their top scorer last year, smaller guard, kind of like Nathan George, and then Luke O'Brien today, according to his own Instagram, is going to come in from Colorado, also a guard, and he had some pretty good shooting numbers as well. So that puts us, I think that fills out the team, actually, based on what our writer Drew Gordon had said. By the time that Javian had signed, we only had one scholarship spot left,
yep.
And that's going to be filled in by Luke O'Brien. So we're there. We've got the team. I don't know if it's going to give me the full roster for this coming year.
I don't think they'll have updated that yet. Definitely not with Luke O'Brien on there. Just happened today.
Yeah, definitely not. So at least I believe we're still going to have Lance Terry, Nathan George. Didn't Debo leave, or is he done?
I believe Debo's out.
Yeah, Debo's out. Yeah, that's right. Bane Odongo, Miles Kelly could come back, not sure there. Kawasi Reeves, Suare, Abraham Suare, I believe, still around. Emmer Nichols and Marco San Miguel. I don't even know if we're on scholarship, actually.
I don't think they were.
Probably not. So, yep, still some stuff to go there. No coaching changes, no nothing like that. So that's all sticking as to plan. But two guards. I mean, college basketball right now. We've got our center. Here's the thing. We've got our center. You don't need another Bynadonko. You got to have outside shooting.
Having Bi play the four would be a taller lineup than I think we've been able to see from Georgia Tech in the past. Yeah. I would not be against having maybe another, you know, freshman development.
Well, I think that's where our recruiting class is coming into play here. We've got some tall dudes coming from there.
And, like, you really don't want to be reliant on, hey, I hope the freshman stuff work out. Obviously, we've seen Bi play the five a lot. But I think this is kind of like the And I know we saw Moses play the five a decent amount when Moses Wright was on campus, but kind of like the difference between Moses the five versus Moses the four with James Banks at the five, I think, is kind of what we're talking about here, to put it in the recent Tech roster construction perspective. Right. Does that track?
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And maybe we've got centers coming in. I'm forgetting the name of the guy who's coming in Dorian. Onwuchekwa, that's the guy. That's the guy we got. He's a four-star big man that joined our recruiting class. Yeah, he's 6'10", power forward center. So, there you go.
Honestly, it sounds like he profiles pretty similar to Bi based on the mixed role there. But honestly, I also feel like a pure five is pretty rare in this day and age. So
yeah. I'll quote Drew here. He's on defense. He's got a 7'3", wingspan will immediately be an asset. He's on the skinnier side, but he's got some heft. He says far more than what Cole Kerouac had. Good ball skills. Got some touch around the rim, which is good because we have certainly lacked big guy touch around the rim in the past. So that's going to be, hopefully he'll develop nicely. And then I think our last men's basketball note is that Jose Alvarado is in the playoffs with the Pelicans. They got the last play-in win, and so they're facing Oklahoma City right now, who is the one seed in the Western Conference. They already had one game. They only lost by two, but there's more games coming up this week, so there's some of Jose Alvarado's biggest games he's ever gonna have played Oklahoma City's young. They're probably gonna beat New Orleans, but a lot of teams are prone to upsets. So I think Oklahoma City just being so young gives a shot for Jose to. I think if he's ever gonna have like a oh my god he did this thing and won a game, this is of the best chances he's gonna have in a Pelicans uniform to do that. And he's so fun to watch still. If you haven't seen Jose play in the NBA after you watched him at Tech, all the fun things that he did at Tech, he's still doing in the NBA. Like, none of that, he has not chilled out on any of it. It's just even more intense and against much better players, and he's operating at the same level.
Jack, I think your implication of upset-prone NBA playoffs is the antithesis of everything that I've heard about the NBA over the last 6 years.
I have said that, but Oklahoma City only won by two in their last in game one against New Orleans, and New Orleans does not have Brandon Ingram right now. But they also have Zion, and if Zion can be the Zion we at least seen him be in the past, that makes things interesting. Very interesting.
The Pelicans are just one of those, and the NBA is. And this is an NBA podcast, but I'm going to indulge myself here. I feel like they just have such a collection of characters, and they exist at a mildly competent level. So I think it makes for interesting basketball and the upset potential. I totally see where you're coming from there. But
yeah, gonna be fun. Of course, if we get more basketball stuff, that'll get updated. Drew Gordon's doing a great job for us, keeping some stuff updated on the website. You can go there, and I'm doing my best to post it all on our Twitter as well. Okay, last little bit here. Let's go quickly. Men's tennis ACC championships beat Louisville as they were supposed to, 4-0 in their first match, and then had to play Wake Forest. And as we know, if there is a tennis team from North Carolina,
you're spooky.
It's not a good sign if you're not also from North Carolina. We are not. And we lost 4-0 in our second round match. So that is the end of the regular schedule.
Jack, I've got a question.
Uh-huh.
The phrase stick a fork in it, that usually has a negative connotation, right? Or can it just kind of convey that it is decided or done?
I think that's more the latter here.
Okay. Well, stick a fork in it. I'm saying it now. They're in the field. They're in the field.
Oh, yeah. No, I think we can agree on
that.
Yeah.
They are comfortably in the field. I would be
astonished. At least Andres Barton's Andres is playing singles at least.
The team is going to be in. They are a top 30 team by every metric terms of rankings. They finally did the thing that we've been prognosticating for like four seasons in a row.
Time
to turn the corner.
Yep.
The corner has been turned. Hey. They're there. They're going to be playing more. You heard it here first. If you want to tune in next Monday night, April 29th, the men's and women's selection shows in. And I'm going to call it a second time. Stick a fork in it. The women are in. Both tennis teams are going to be dancing. At very least, tennis, and golf to close out the spring. We'll see what happens with track individuals as well as baseball, softball.
It'd be really cool. I mean, we're going to, golf and tennis squared, absolutely happening. It'd be really cool if one of baseball or softball could sneak their way. And that'd be a nice, I think that would be more than we expected, probably.
I think more than we reasonably expected, but in my head, and maybe this is me being unrealistic, is I feel like at least Georgia Tech baseball or softball should be in and the other should be a bubble team at worst every year with the pedigree that these programs have. But this year they're just both bubble teams. So, that's where we're at. And who knows? Like I said last week, baseball has enough leeway on the schedule that if they win every weekend from here out, like that's a scary two seed versus not making the tournament,
Right. So there we go. The women lost 4-3 in their first match against Clemson, which not a good loss for us, I would say. Not great there. But as we said, they're basically a sure bet to make the tournament field. So was that 23 straight NCAA tournament appearances for women's tennis? Was it 23 or 24 this year?
I think it's every year since either 2000 or 99. I believe that's also all of their tournament appearances ever. The one blip is 2020. So whatever that math works out to be is that.
Minus COVID. Cool. All right. Yeah. Great. So that's where we're at. We're in that, as we've been saying about 18 times here in various forms and ways, we are in the final stretch here for the spring sports. So going to be good to see at least see them do those matches, our postseason so far, just as an institute. Football bowl win.
I know that most people probably do not listen to the very last second of this podcast every week. So I'm going to plug this here while we still got some content to talk about, including Eric Singleton Jr.,
we'll
get to in a sec, speaking of football. We're talking about the run-up to the postseason here, which is very real, and it's coming. So if you have ideas or things that you want us to talk about during the summer when we have the ability to explore and deep dive on some of these other topics, let us know, because we are no strangers to some very, very niche rabbit holes, but we want to know what everyone wants to hear. From therumbleseat at gmail.com for email. You can, tweet at us or things like that too. I think we do a decent job of reading the comments on the site too, but the summer is coming. We got postseason play before then, but
we've got some ideas that we've thrown out there, but there's enough space to have whatever you guys feel like us making us talk about.
This is an earnest call for your feedback.
Do it.
How's that?
I know at least 80 of you out there listen to this every week, so tell us something. Okay, moving on. I forgot. I was running down postseason success so far this year for Tech. Football, win a bowl game. Volleyball, get a massive upset win against Florida to make the Sweet 16, and then face Nebraska. That's it. That's all we've done so far. Oh, well, the women's basketball made the WBIT, so they at least got to something.
I don't know if that counts in the Director's Cup, though. I think that's just NCAA finishes. So, that'll be a zero on the old scorecard.
We've got two. We're of the ones we've made, we're doing all right.
And I think it count. I should look this up. But
swimming made the NCAA championship.
Yes, but
the guys made it.
Score a point in order to get a point there. Don't quote me on that.
Okay.
But I don't think we scored a point. So.
Gotcha. I know that. Well, the men. They
were there.
The men were there. They were at least there. They got. they acquired water on their body. And then these are the rest. So track and field. These are not the teams that are notably great nationally of our spring sports, which are usually quite good. Eric Singleton Jr., though, had a fantastic thing. We had the Georgia Tech Invitational, which this is the first year I'd missed this in like 3 years. I totally didn't realize it was happening, which is on me. He ran the 100-meter dash. He ran Eric Singleton Jr., our wide receiver who just came off the spring game, ran a 10:32, which is 8/100ths off the Georgia Tech record in the 100-meter dash.
But also, it's 12 one-hundredths off his personal best.
Oh, my God.
So,
I expect him to run this faster at ACCs.
I was going to say, if there's a time and a place to do it, that might be the spot for it. I am on the record as loving the fact that dual sport athletes still exist.
Yes, it's fantastic.
I encourage, if anyone's with any department out there and you know, even the thing that I think, Jack, you and I can both vouch for, not that we both went varsity in anything, but nope. Being, you know, rounded athletes and having a variety of experience was certainly enriching at the very least
to
our experiences.
Yeah, you don't want to diminish the people that are like train in their very particular sport, and then some other dude just walks in, is like, okay, I'm gonna just be the best at this in a second. Yeah. But if we're gonna have athletes that can just like Eric just show, I mean, also he does a position in football where 85% of the position is running in a straight line, so like it makes a lot more sense here. But it's like, yeah, if you got, I don't know, let's just say Bianca Bertolino happens to have like a really bomb ass tennis serve as well as a volleyball serve. Like, why not give her a run? Why not give her a run if she could swing a racket that well?
I am a little sad that I never saw Moses Wright play tennis because he was a high school tennis player.
Oh, he was? Oh,
I feel,
man,
like that would be awesome.
That would have been great.
But, you know, everyone's got those talents out there, and consider this a word of encouragement if you are just doing your thing, college, high school, whatnot. You know, there's value in, you know, being a band geek and playing two sports, or, you know, enjoying the clubs that you do too. So,
yeah,
you know, that this is my encouragement for, you know, exploring all those various interests. Aspects.
This is also where I'd like to request if anyone from the Georgia Tech CRC happens to listen or that works at the CRC, I know there is a very reasonable rule that it's in place where athletes on scholarship or who are on any of the teams can't play intramurals. Like, if you're on a team, if you're on a team, like one of the actual NCAA sanctioned teams, you cannot play said sport in interview, and they never do.
Said sport.
Yeah.
I was going to say, a bunch of football players definitely dunked on my my floor team in intramural basketball.
I never came across playing any. Well, I played. I did not. My basketball leagues never came across any of them. I think we were playing. I was playing like co-op leagues or something like that. And, yeah. But I'm just saying, it'd be cool if at times, I don't know, if just like just let Aisha Won Aranot just, you know, play a couple games. And just go out there and ball against some dumb dudes. Like,
I want to remember who was on that team, because it would be some great dude remembering. But, oh, man. I remember showing up and being like, yeah, the boys are not going to win today.
I think it'd be cool if there was, like, an athletes division. Yeah. And you could draw a crowd by, like, having the swim team play the golf team and kickball or something like that. Like, that'd be pretty cool. Okay, anyways, we're off track here. Track and field, I mentioned Eric Singleton, 800s off the 100-meter dash record. It'll be so cool if he gets that in a future meet, because I got some time for that. Jake, you want to take me through anything else of note from this meet?
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a bunch of first and second place finishes. I don't think we have the time or wherewithal to run through all of them, but just know that lots of seconds, lots of firsts, yep, in a variety of different events. One thing that I did want to pull up real quick is just which other teams were there, because I don't think we touched on these numbers yet, but the U.S. Track and Field and Cross Country Coaches of America, they do put out a aggregated ranking of, mm-hmm, teams, and Tech has slipped a little bit to 136 for the men and 139 for the women, which is a little bit lower than they've kind of been in the past. I went looking for the like a meet recap box score, like psych sheet swimming type deal, because they usually post them, but didn't really get any anywhere for that, because I was trying to figure out who else was there, because that kind of helps me frame, you know,
how to feel.
And yeah, I know in the past the Yellow Jacket invites had some more folks at it than the Georgia Tech one, but
yeah, this one I think historically it's been like some like nearby schools, of course, and a lot of, yeah, like the D2, D3 lower schools.
Some unattached folks.
I go back to the picture though, yeah, on the screen there. I do see my friend Harrison Fultz has had a senior day. Harrison's a solid dude. Glad I got to know him. So, you know, all my friends are going away that were athletes on campus. It's so sad.
Yeah.
Anyways, and then
time stops for no one, Jack.
Oh, man. Oh, well. Up next for Tech, the all-historic Penn Relays this coming weekend.
Some might say the greatest amateur athletic event in the country.
I think
I don't know if I'm someone, but I certainly see the argument for
I think that's so. Fair. I think that's absolutely a fair thing. And then the LSU invite on the 27th. LSU. Speaking of LSU, they won gymnastics. Women's gymnastics this past weekend.
Gotcha.
I was invited to be in a NCAA gymnastics betting pool because someone needed to pick LSU to round the field out, and I said no because I want LSU to lose in everything, and I would have won money if I had just gotten past myself, but I did not. Okay, club lacrosse, number 8, club lacrosse. The big news here is they are now the SCLC champions. They beat Florida 15-10 in the final after beating Florida State 17-16 in the semifinals. Take me through this. This seems great.
Yes, it is great, and the only thing that's not great about it is my typo. It was actually 16-10, so I set you up poorly on that one.
Oh, no, we scored another goal.
Oh, no, yeah. Georgia Tech finishes the regular season at 13-3. The SCLC is a great league, so it's nice to come out on top of that. They were tied and close at the half against FSU and Florida, respectively. I did see a box score for the FSU game and noted that Joseph Rose and Pierce Quarles combined for 7 goals. It was tied as late as 11-11 against FSU, and then Tech kind of put things away from there. Florida State did crawl back, bringing it within 1 with 53 seconds to play. So certainly was they got out by 4 goals, but they did not stay out by 4 goals. The Florida game, by contrast, they kind of dug their way out of an early hole. But from there, you know, if you think about scoring margin the rest of the way, that would have been a 16-7 margin after being in a 3-0 hole. So very nice way to finish that off. The Nationals bracket is not yet available, but they'll certainly be in the field with the SCLC win.
Yep, that'll be how that goes. Big stuff there. I think we mentioned Ken Lovich, 400 wins now, 400 wins all time. So that's big stuff there. Good to see. These dudes are of the. It sucks that this is not a full fledged sport on campus because these dudes would absolutely rock in our world and would be, up there with golf and volleyball in terms of easily the best teams on campus by far, I think. And the ACC, of course, is good at lacrosse as well.
Yeah.
And so we'd be seeing them play the Carolina schools that usually dominate the sport.
Syracuse is pretty dang good.
Syracuse is good as well. And yep. So we'd be playing legitimate teams all the time, and we'd be really good.
I don't know if we've done like a history of the sports that are no longer varsity at Georgia Tech episode before, but that might be a good idea to pocket for this summer between wrestling, boxing, rifle, men's gymnastics, and especially lacrosse with how much it's kind of still in the front of the mind. I think I'm going to put that one in the brain box.
Right,
I think that would make
for
some good stuff there. But in the meantime, we've already done the summer plug, but you can always email us from therumbleseat@gmail.com. You can find us at fromtherumbleseat.com. You can find us on Twitter at
FTRS. I was going to give you trivia.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, trivia for me.
I mean, you're going to know the. I think.
Oh my gosh.
This is like an entry exam question, really, because it just came up during work at all today.
Is it from the book I loaned you?
Yes.
Of which I have 2 copies.
Yes. What year was the first Tech Georgia game?
The first
in football
Georgia Tech game was 1893. Georgia Tech won 28-6. That's what it was. I knew I was doubting myself for the 28-7.
The year is also correct there. I'll note for those that don't know, and this is why, if you ever have a Georgia fan just being like, haha, you're Georgia Tech, just let them know that after we were winning, actually while we were winning that game, Georgia was such sore losers that they just started throwing rocks at our team.
Yeah, they chased us out of town, Jack.
They chased us out of town. So just remember that. They are sore losers.
Yeah.
And that's how that is. Okay, you can finish the outro.
Anyways, that book, by the way, is Wallace's Dress Her in White and Gold. Highly recommended reading for all Georgia
I did
Tech.
Figure out the 1963 edition is available online at the library, so you can also read it there.
Oh, perfect. For free. And also the archives that the library has, just a general plug there, quite good content if you're looking for old techniques or old photos or anything like that. As noted, you can find us on Twitter as well at JakeGrant98, at Jack Nicholas. You can find Section 103 at Section 103 and Section103.com. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at From the Rumble Seat. You can find this podcast wherever fine podcasts are distributed. Good night, good luck, and